Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
I got to tell you, I'm absolutely loving it right now.
Oh, my God. My God.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
This is for you. Let's go.
It's very upsetting to see the White Sox go through injury after injury after injury and have so many of their young pitchers unavailable to them. It hurts at a very deep level. It reminds me, I don't know how many people have seen the movie Casper Hauser. It is a Werner Herzog movie, which is subtitled Every Man for Himself and God Against Everyone. And the idea is you're trying to answer the questions of where do we come from? Why are we here? Where do we go? And that feels like the White Sox. They've just appeared here in the middle of nowhere. Oh, my God, look at all the promise. Why are we here, though? It's some horrible metaphor that wounds your psyche.
Mike Mulligan
is fearless. He's observant and has great emotional intelligence.
David Hall.
He's a winner. He's intelligent. He's innovative. He has strong character.
The Cubs get a little bit of a respite, time to step back, take a deep breath. They had some fun with the simulated game yesterday. They'll have a workout today. They get to rearrange their pitching staff. I think they have Hendricks and Lester now going in Cleveland, and they move Millsy back. I think that was smart. So they get to use this to their advantage if they can. I think they would have preferred to play in St. Louis. I think everybody would have preferred to see the Cubs and Cardinals play down there. It wasn't safe enough to do so. The Cardinals are now going, as we discussed, 2 weeks between games, but I think this could only help the Cubs. They are a confident team. They are going to be a rested team, and they are a healthy team that makes them a dangerous team.
Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Let's freaking go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I think I might have gotten a little carried away with my metaphor there, but it's tough to watch the White Sox struggle. It's also tough to watch perhaps the end of college football. Am I being overdramatic by saying that given what happened in the MAC and given just the idea that we're on the verge here with a little thing called college football, the Big Ten, it just seems like this house of cards is going to collapse here, David. It just seems very difficult to kind of keep propping things up. I know there have been some of the student-athletes that have tried to get together and emphasize how much they want to play, including Trevor Lawrence, which kind of surprises me because if I'm Trevor Lawrence, I've done enough and I'm not looking to play. I'm looking to play professionally. I was a little surprised by that. But I guess just love of the game. You can never underestimate how many players really want to play the game.
Well, there's a lot there. I think that the Big Ten will be the first conference to follow what the MAC and the Mid-American Conference did over the weekend, and that is to postpone the start of college football until 2021. I don't think that the term canceling the season is – unless I've been led to believe something differently. I don't think they're canceling the season as much as they are postponing it. It will create a, you know, very fascinating set of circumstances and options for players at the top of the game, like Trevor Lawrence, to decide whether or not, if that is the case, if the Power Five schools and conferences do delay the beginning of college football until the first of the year, they're going to have to decide whether or not they're going to play it or not, or wait for the NFL draft. I doubt that the players who were potential first-round draft picks or second-round draft picks, the majority of those guys likely will opt out. Okay, so that's the postponed versus cancellation thing I think is big. The other thing, Mully, is that this Trevor Lawrence with a group of players, you know, banding together last night at the 11th hour and then at midnight releasing a statement that says, hashtag, we are united, we want to play, and it's, you know, headlined with the ACC, Big Ten, Pac-12, SEC, and Big 12, and explaining why they want to play and what they want in terms of universal mandated health and safety procedures, giving the players the opportunity, guaranteeing eligibility if they opt out. It's well thought out. It's certainly, you have to respect where they're coming from, but it's too late. This is a conversation that college football should have had 2 months ago. At midnight, within hours of the Big Ten presidents meeting to discuss the cancellation or postponement of a college football season, isn't the time to be having these appeals. They should have had this discussion months ago and been more prepared. That's the only criticism I would level here in terms of the whole process. There's no college football czar at the NCAA level to have unified this movement or this effort or this cause. And that's a problem that we're seeing right now.
I think, first of all, that a postponement of the 2020 college football season is a form of cancellation, whether anyone wants to admit it or not, because moving it into the moving it on the calendar puts it up against what you just said, the NFL draft. It takes away a huge important portion of college football players because and you know what it also does, David, is it really messes with your year-to-year schedule, right? I think it's unavoidable at this point. I don't know how they're going to get beyond it, but if you play after the first of the year, whatever their postponement scheduling is, not only do you lose those players, but now you're trying to figure out how you come back and play a normal schedule. Is that what we want to call it? A normal football season next year? Yeah, that is a real spanner in the works in terms of trying to keep the flow of season to season. It really a virtually impossible thing to do in my mind, given the number of players that will not partake.
Well, I think you'd have to have some limitations on contact next year. I think you'd have to have some delays in maybe the starting dates of those seasons. But I don't know that it's impossible. It's probably more possible and likely and even safer than playing college football this year under these conditions, because that's the thing that is going to get lost in this, you know, support for this college player movement, is that there's going to be a suggestion and a link to what these past movements have represented, which is, you know, protecting the rights of players and everything. This isn't about empowering these players as much as it is protecting them. So it's not safe to play college football this fall because of the virus and the lack of a vaccine and all the spread of everything that we've talked about. Next year, that's a different conversation in terms of whether it's safe in terms of the bodies of these players and what it means to have them play probably 5 months later and having two seasons in one calendar year. I'd like to study that further, but I think that's a better option than playing now. And so if that's the best they can come up with, I can understand why they would want to play college football after the first of the year without canceling the season and giving these kids that opportunity to finish what they started in terms of a career or in terms of a season.
I'm not arguing that. I just think that the problem is if you do play a spring season, and that's what they're calling it, a spring 2021 season, and then you're coming back in the following fall, I'm not sure how all that works out and how all that happens. And, again, I think you're right. I think the postponement is inevitable. I just don't know how we get to normal. And it's not just with college football, I suppose it's in our lives, but this is a great example of you know, sort of dramatic change that has to happen. And I know the state guidelines will come into play in different places, but I don't know. You know, I've always wondered about the wisdom of having, you know, separate rules based on geography when the virus isn't limited to a particular part of the country. It seems to be going around wherever people are.
And that's a problem that you're going to see probably this week. There's going to be a lot of, I hope we can avoid this, but there's inevitably going to be some division between what the Big Ten does and what the Pac-12 does and what the SEC wants to do, and maybe the Big 12, because they'll look at these isolated cases or geographic locations that aren't considered to be more at risk. But when you talk about college football, the thing you can't do is provide a bubble over every college football program.
Yes,
they are on a campus,
right,
with other students. They're exposed to, you know, thousands of other classmates and things that you just can't isolate from and separate them from. And look, you know, it's scary enough to send send your students and your kids back to these college campuses without knowing how they're going to behave and what they're going to be exposed to. I just can't see operating a college football season in that environment with those questions. Now, and there's also liability concerns and questions that can't be answered or addressed yet adequately, and that's why you're seeing this happen now, because of those things coming up and the president's thinking, okay, let's all take a step back here and let's do the right thing.
Well, I don't think it takes much of of contemplation of this issue without realizing that there are two things that are completely separate that are involved here. One is health and safety of all the players and anybody involved in it, and the other is sort of the financial impact. And the idea that we're connecting those two things is really against what they're supposed to stand for. But to my mind, if any of these schools are going to continue to play, if everyone else decides, you know what, there's a bad idea, we're not going to do it, the president's got together, listen, you know, we're all about the students, and we're going to, for health and safety reasons, for the well-being of everyone involved, we're going to postpone the season, and you get, you know, and I don't know who it is, the SEC, whomever. Yeah, we're going to play anyway. To what end? I mean, would there be a legitimate champion crown?
No.
If this is the point.
That's the point. It's a good point.
Right. And I think that's a huge point that we're not talking about.
Well, you cannot have the SEC play a 10-game schedule, or maybe let's say the ACC play a 10-game schedule, the Big Ten play in 2021, and oh, look, it's Alabama playing Clemson for the national title again, but they're the only two conferences that are in action. How national of a champion is it really? It's a fraud. It would be wrong, and that's why I think that you need some uniformity in the approach. And you know, you made a really good point about the professionalization of college sports. We understand what's going on here, and we get USA Today, you know, the 50-plus public schools of the Power Five conferences, Mully, that's $4.1 billion in fiscal year revenue tied to college football. So we know what's at stake here. But these are not professionals. They aren't guys getting paid and worried about salary caps and all these things that we talk about when we talk about in the context of the NFL having a season. That's an entirely different discussion. So you have to keep these things in mind, because college football, it doesn't just serve the people going to the NFL. It's, you know, it can't just be about money. There's got to be more to that conversation than that.
You know, the other thing is a risk assessment. Are you really going to put it in the hands of the people? I'm not sure. I mean, I know this. I know that players want to play. I get that. But do they really have all the information they need in order to make that decision? You know, do we have enough information on the long-term impact of suffering from this horrible virus? What happens to people, right? I mean, it affects different people in different ways. You know, as much as I want to play, what if it affects my future and my long-term prospects? And, you know, again, you talk about health insurance in 30 years for people. I just don't know that want to right now should be enough of a reason to allow that kind of risk.
Nobody doubts that these players want to play. And right. everybody should respect that they want to play, whether you're Trevor Lawrence or the guy that's never going to get off the bench in, at your Mid-American Conference program. But, Mully, it's not about wanting to play. These are 18 to 22-year-olds, and without generalizing, but I have one of them, you know, and I think we all can relate to this idea. There's a feeling of invincibility that these right. kids have that just isn't very realistic, and that's where you step off and you say, okay, you're not empowered to make this decision yet because you just don't. You're just not going to be making it for the right reasons. That's why we're going to make it for you, because that's what we're supposed to do, is to look out for your safety and your welfare. And, son, that's why you're not going to be playing college football until 2021 at the earliest, because this is in your best interest.
All right. We're going to get to more conversation about this, but we've got Bruce Levine on deck, and we're going to bring in Bruce, and we'll talk to him. The Cubs got themselves a weekend off, an unexpected weekend off. Does that help or hurt? And does the fact that it wasn't planned, that it was unexpected, how does that play into it? We'll ask those questions of Bruce and find out where the White Sox are at. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Play ball!
Bruce Levine, 670 The Score baseball analyst.
It is all baseball.
32 years, baseball veteran reporter.
Bruce, I've known you for a number of years now.
Breaking stories faster than a herd of speeding turtles.
I like turtles. All right, you're great zombie.
Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine.
By the way, I loved you in The Wizard of Oz.
Bruce Levine.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Bruce Levine joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Morning, Bruce.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm still feeling a little upset about last night's White Sox game. But let's begin where you guys want to begin. We can get to that, I guess, down the road.
Well, it's depressing. I got to be honest with you. You know, they won a game there. They won the first game of that series. Dylan Cease on the bump. They walk eight guys and hit a batsman and have a shutout. And you think, wow, that's pretty unbelievable. Then you come into that game last night, you know, you get beaten pretty badly on Saturday, and you think last night they're going to win the series, and they get a lead with Giolito going seven innings, and you're feeling good about it, a pitcher's duel with Bieber, and next thing you know, you're giving up the lead, and then you're losing in extra innings, and you just need to win at home. Why can't they win at home? I get it. The crowd noise isn't a factor, but my God.
Yeah, they've lost 4 out of 5 there. And it's the bummer factor yesterday. Somehow, some way, bummer would have been an integral part of that hopeful victory last night. Not game was not held. And you're going to really miss him. And that's an indication right there. The ridiculous rule finally impacted a Chicago team last night, and that's with a man on second base. That just isn't baseball. And I guess when you see your local teams go through those things and see runs that were not earned, I mean really earned, and earned runs in the books with a man at second base, that sticks in my cross still. That's just not baseball. And I know you sound like you're crying in your beer when it comes to that, but that's just a horrible rule, probably the worst rule ever implemented in Major League Baseball.
What did you think of Grandal playing first, Bruce? And do you think that him at first base, it made the Indians kind of tempted them into making that squeeze play that worked when they scored that run?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, you have the Terry and that's a good observation, David. But you have Sandy Alomar running the Cleveland Indians right now, not Terry Francona, that's having some stomach issues and is away from the team for a week right now. And Sandy Alomar is a little bit of a different guy, riverboat gambler. So even if Abreu was at first, I think he probably, if he had the right guy up there to bunt, which he did, I think they would have attempted it. But that's still a good call. Sandy probably feeling better about making that call with Grandal, who doesn't play there every day. So that could have impacted the game. But he made a pretty good play on it, and he made it pretty close. But that was certainly impactful, no doubt.
you know, again, I think that when we look at the White Sox, they just keep having these injuries. Aaron Bummer going down this weekend, put on the injured list. And I get it. You know, Tim Anderson's traveling with the team and ready to come back perhaps sooner than later. And, of course, Edwin Encarnacion is supposedly ready to take more violent swings with the shoulder. But it just seems like it's starting to sort of build up a little bit here, Bruce, and it's getting a little bit worrisome.
Well, they blew a game with a bullpen game the other day. You can't just blow games. I mean, again, they're not deep enough in that bullpen right now. As you mentioned, Bummer being out. You know, you have the Lambert injury that's going to be all year long. That's pretty big. They bring a kid up in Anderson, who was supposed to pitch three or four innings in that bullpen day, couldn't get through more than one. They ended up releasing the guy, DFA him afterwards. So, you know, that's bullpen is something that a strength for the Chicago White Sox. And the really great news out of the weekend was Zach Birdie making his debut, striking out two and looking like a power arm, throwing 99. His first three pitches in there, that's encouraging because they're going to need an arm like that. And if he can show his command like he did in his first game, that's a good sign. But that bullpen that was once a strength is going to be looked at in a questionable way. And the offense only scoring 13 runs in the last six games, that's a red flag as well. This offense was really firing well earlier in the year. Right now, without Anderson at the top of the order, you're seeing some impact. And as you said, Mike, getting Anderson back probably maybe by tomorrow, Wednesday at the latest, because he went with on that trip to Detroit, that's going to be big for their offense.
How do you think that will affect the rest of the order? Luis Robert batted seventh last night, I believe. Do you think that he stays down there? And what's changed, Bruce? Because we were talking about this White Sox lineup as being, you know, potent and dangerous and all those things. And then, as you pointed out, you know, it's like 10 runs in the last five and 13, and it's just not been working lately.
Yeah, I mean, Anderson, you know, he doesn't walk, but he's, you know, best hitter in the American League last year, best hitter in baseball, actually, you know, average-wise. And there's an intimidation factor with him up at the plate. You know, there is that, you know, disdain for the other team. You know, there's that swagger that he has that's a little bit distracting for the other team. And I think that he's a really important guy to this offense. They all are. I mean, they have really important sticks in there. But I think the function of the top of the order is essential. And Moncada might take a little bit more on himself with Garcia up there. So getting Anderson back, I think, is the key. And people just not going for the home run ball. You know, we see it all the time in baseball, not just with the White Sox. But, you know, you have to be able to try to manufacture runs. And the White Sox have some speed to be able to do that. As far as the Robert part, I think you will see him continue to stay down for a little bit longer, as long as Anderson's able to go out there physically and do the job and get the job done.
You know, there's a difference, I guess you'd say, between an expected layoff and one that just kind of pops up, like what happened with the Cubs. Had you known that was coming type of thing, I believe, you know, you'd have a heck of a nice time on that break. Mm-hmm. But the St. Louis issues prevent that series, and you know, we can get into them, but I think it's about whether there's rust or relaxation. How do the Cubs react to having a weekend off? What are you expecting from them?
Yeah, David Ross had, you know, made a plan here to give them mostly Saturday off, and then yesterday, you know, they had the five inning game with you know, with Mills going and you know, him getting five innings in and trying to, you know, develop, you know, some energy back into the team after you have that lull and you have a trip where you make to St. Louis and you turn around and come right back. So you're right, Mike. I mean, there is that shutoff valve. Today, he told us yesterday in a Zoom, Russ did, that he's got something special planned for the team. So some fun thing that they're going to do out there, he wouldn't share. But just getting them back into some energy level and getting ready for the games, you know, the next few days in Cleveland, that's the key. And they probably got an inadvertent break with the Plesac situation and the fact that he might be not pitching in that series because of that suspension by the team.
Yeah, he might be in quarantine, or he might be still be driving on the toll road, depending on how traffic is. Bruce, when you look at when you look at the, this week for the Cubs and moving Lester around, and obviously moving Mills to the back of the rotation, was that a respect move? Was that something to keep John Lester, you know, happy, or was that something that you think was the right thing overall?
Yeah, I think Russ attributed to, in some cases, rust factor. You know, they didn't want Lester to go 10 days without pitching. So he was the first one up in St. Louis. He was supposed to pitch on Friday. He's out. He's up there. And then he starts his rotation again over with Hendricks, Darvish, Chatwood, and Mills. You know, that's how he's resetting it going forward. So it gave them a chance to change some things around. Also, get some rest for some of their starters, but they don't want too much rust on their guys, and that's why Lester's first man up pitching tomorrow.
What when we look at the trade deadline, and it's, you know, a ways off, but we're well into August here. I believe it is the 10th today, my youngest daughter's birthday, so God bless Mary.
Oh, great. Happy birthday.
Thank you, buddy. We have a big day of events planned. But what's going to happen come trade deadline? Do you expect a lot of activity? Do you feel like there's kind of building ideas? And you know, we look around baseball, you know, there's so many questions about whether the season continues, about, you know, whether or not you're going to get all of this in if another team is hit. Every time you turn around, there's another Cardinals test, even when they went a couple days, 3 days without any positive test, boom, here comes another one. So I just don't know how we're going to get the season in, if that affects everything.
Yeah, I mean, look, trade-wise, I think the Cubs are probably going to look for not one but two bullpen guys. But at what cost? You know, what type of young player are you going to give up for 1 month of tournament and the possibility of winning this year going forward, knowing that you're trying very desperately to hold on to your young players as your second wave of competition probably begins over the next couple of years. So what do you give up for that? But, you know, with the problems they had with inexperience in the Cub bullpen and Kimbrel's struggles, you know they're going to want to fortify that and take advantage of this very good start. But again, you know, what will teams expect? What type of money can you take back? I'm sure some teams like Arizona, who were disappointing and far behind San Diego, the Rockies, and the Dodgers right now, is a team you look at. You look at veterans in their on their team, and they might get traded. That's what you look for at this point. But you know, how are the revenue streams and the money coming in and out impacted by these moves that you're going to make? Are you going to be able to take on salary not only for this year, but in for coming seasons that are coming up here, without knowing what revenue is going to be like in 2021 as well?
Thanks, Bruce. Good stuff.
All right, buddy.
Guys, have a great week. Thank you.
You too.
That is Bruce Levine. Yeah, this stuff will be happening as we move forward here. All right, want to talk more about college football. We're going to bring in Sean Frazier from Northern Illinois, the MAC, the first conference to kind of decide they've got to postpone football. We're expecting everyone to kind of follow suit at this point. I believe, you know, individual schools had done it right, didn't the Ivy League, but the MAC a little bit different. And now we're looking at the possibility of the Big Ten following suit perhaps today, the Pac-12 very shortly after that. I think that we've got a lot of questions, and we'll talk to Sean Frazier next. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7, The Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Sean Frazier is the Associate Vice President and Director of Athletics at Northern Illinois University. We're delighted to welcome him in on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford, in Melrose Park. Sean, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Sean.
I'm doing well. Good morning, guys. Good morning.
You know, I got to tell you, I don't envy what you had to go through and the difficulty of the decision and the fact that the MAC has postponed the football season. Must have been an agonizing decision to make, but obviously the right one.
Yes, excruciating. I'm still numb to a lot of the discussions, and as well as discussions with student athletes, parents and guardians, and just colleagues. It's definitely tough. It's something that you don't want to go through, but at the same time, I have to balance out about the science and understanding what's going on with COVID. So, yeah, real tough one. I would agree. It's one of the toughest that I've had to make in my career.
Tough on your heart, Sean, I know, but you followed your head, and I wondered if you could discuss and just describe how the conversation went with your Mid-American Conference peers, with Lisa Freeman as well, the president of NIU, and her background playing a pivotal role here in terms of you two, I don't want to say leading the way, but certainly getting credit for being one of the more influential, impactful voices in the room when it came to the MAC deciding to cancel football.
Yeah, you know, it goes back to the science. It goes back to, you know, our doctors, you know, our team doctors within the league, our doctors here at NIU, the clinicians, the researchers. And you really got to go back there, because I'm not a medical doctor. There's no one on our AD group that are medical doctors. But there are at the presidential level. And my boss, who I'm extremely biased by, she's outstanding. And she gets it. She understands it. She lives it. And then at the same time, you know, doing what's right, you know, what the timing in which that we're talking about, the issues of uncertainty, the issues that we do not know about the long and short term effects, the new information is coming out about the effect on the heart, the lungs. You know, these are all things that, quite frankly, you have to safeguard when you talk about permissible activities, right? We would do that regardless of COVID-19. And now we're talking about something that's extremely infectious, something that, quite frankly, that we can test for, but as far as us able to stop or corral, we can't do that. And so those all went into that. So when the presidents got together on Saturday morning and talked about that, and talked about the data and drilled down further, and our commissioner with his particular leadership has presented this, a decision was made. And I firmly believe it's the right decision based on the lack of information that we have around COVID and the uptick in spread that's currently going on right now. So, yeah, it's just a tough thing to take anything away from our young people relative to activity or competition, but to safeguard them, to do the right thing, is definitely a watershed moment. And like my wife says, you know, adulting needed to happen relative to taking care of our young people. And I stand by that.
And I think that is such an important part of it, because I don't know why people seem reluctant to accept certain facts, but it's here. We don't have a medical treatment, let alone a vaccine. And people are put in harm's way, and certainly with a sport like football, it's going to be awful difficult to create any kind of bubble within a college program when you're talking about a group of programs. And I don't know, I really honestly don't know how you go about it. And you say following the science, there's a reluctance to do that at a national level. So it's very difficult to make these decisions because, for whatever reason, there's pushback and there's denial.
Yeah, and I think that's very well said. I think there are some people who are just enough is enough. You know, we need to abandon this quarantine. We need to stop putting it on COVID. We need to not, you know, we need to fight through this like this is some type of storm or something like that relative to no long-term effects, right? So I don't get that. I don't understand that. Obviously, it's something that's there, and I get it. I just think that when you talk about someone's life, when you talk about long or short-term effects, when you don't have all the information, and you can and you will have some of that information 4, 5, 6 months down the line, I think that's where the risk comes into play. And I think that, you know, it's always good to hear people talk about that, you know, like, hey, you should let them play. But, you know, they're not playing. Their kid is not involved. So for me, in my position, in our roles, in my presence, in our council of presidents and ADs and commissioner, there's the skin in the game, okay? We've got young people that we have that we are in charge of, and we have to make those right, calculated decisions. And I'll go with, I appreciate the fact that the entertainment value and folks want to see people play, and there's a lot of other issues around with the student athletes and mental health and all those nice things. But the bottom line is the people's lives could be affected on this. And once that reality comes into play, you're going to do the right decision.
Yeah, and I couldn't applaud you any more than we are. And I think a lot of people listening are probably nodding their heads if they're parents. And Sean, I think from a practical standpoint, then if you look ahead, and I'm sure you probably have started these kind of discussions, but if you move football to the spring, as Molly and I were talking earlier, it removes one risk, perhaps, if things are better and you're able to play a schedule in the spring, but it creates another set of risks in that you have two potentially seasons played in one calendar year. And how did those conversations go? And how would you explain to somebody whose concerns would be, okay, these are bodies that shouldn't be exposed to that kind of thing in a 9-month period?
Well, the same way we use the science and the data relative to COVID, we're going to do the same thing, obviously, in looking at a spring opportunity. And you're right, you know, I haven't played a sport, you know, to conceive of a football season, you know, 12 games and then 12 games in the same calendar year. I think that's not a direction that I would support. I think that we need to take a look at some modification of that, you know, maybe a, you know, 5, 6, 7 game type deal. That we can monitor, that we can make sure that the wear and tear in our young people's bodies, especially in the sport of football, I would say across all sports, we would have to limit and reduce what that looks like. So that's something that's ongoing, to be perfectly honest with you. We have not made any final declaration on that. We have not put any other models together that say that we're going to have a traditional season in the spring like we had in the fall. But I would say it would be a very much a modified system or modified a number of games, especially in the sport of football, so we understand and get back on track in 2021. Because ultimately, that's what this decision was all about, is getting back on track for the fall. And I'm definitely a traditionalist as saying that we should be playing football in the fall. So we have to that's TBD. We got to figure out where that stands.
Sean, obviously, you've got a unique perspective, not just as an administrator, but as a player back in the day, and you know what it's like at a place like Alabama and the way they will take their football as religion, for lack of a better term. And now we're talking about, will the Power Five conferences follow suit? It seems like the Big Ten is ready. Seems like the Pac-12. But there's going to be a lot of pushback, and even from some players that I found surprising. You know, I thought Trevor Lawrence for sure would be a guy that would want to bow out of this given the draft and all that stuff. But is it a different decision in your mind for other schools and other conferences than it was for you guys?
I don't think so. I just think that people want to play football. And as a former student athlete, nobody wanted to play football more than myself. So I get it. I understand what Trevor's doing. I understand what folks down south and across the country are dealing with. You know, this is an emotional decision. This is something that, again, that has to be reviewed at the highest level and drilled down. So I get the want and need. But at the end of the day, there has to be some semblance of understanding about what really is happening with the virus and how we can control it and what are the long and short term effects of it and how do we what do we know right now? What can we prevent in the next 4 to 5 to 6 months? I think all that has to be put into a blender. You know, even with the adjustment of COVID and this postponement, there are going to be a new set of issues now that we're going to have to face from moving, you know, the season from the fall to the spring. And we have to account for that. So I think it's important to know that, yeah, the passion and drive for football is there. And there's going to be some reluctance about that. And that what I would say is better educate the students, better educate the parents and guardians, better educate the folks that are around these young people, as well as the individuals that are overseeing these issues. So that's, I got to say, we have been extremely educated here in the MAC about what the repercussions could be and will be, and especially now, as opposed to 5 to 6 months. And I think that's the key issue right now dealing with COVID-19.
Within your industry or within your constituency, Sean, how would you describe the breakdown in terms of feedback or backlash between praise and criticism for the decision that you made?
Well, you know, I haven't received any criticism. I think people will wait and see, because here's the deal. We already know who has already died, and we know the statistics around that, and we know who folks have been infected, and we understand the rate, and we understand the uptick. So we haven't. There's a number of folks that have come out to say thank you for supporting and helping our young people. And I think that's where we are right now. I don't want to take any credit. This is not about me. This is about COVID-19. And if I would have any other way, we'd be playing football. There's no question about that. But I've got to be able to look myself in the mirror. I've got to be able to say that, you know what, I've done everything I can. I know that I wouldn't have my son out there playing, just like many of the doctors have said to me. And I've got to be able to stand up for these young people based on my job. It would be irresponsible for me to be able to not know all the facts right now and let these young folks play. And I think that's where I'm at with it. I'm just a working Joe. You know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to do my job. And at the end of the day, I'm no hero. I'm more about a part of trying to safeguard the young people here at NIU. And that's kind of where it is.
Well, listen, Sean, it's great to talk to you. Really appreciate your adulting, to be brutally honest about it, because it's so important, and to have that perspective is so important. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Sean.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you guys. Thanks a lot for the platform, and have a great day. Be safe.
Take care. Great talking to him. I mean, that's awesome. That is a good man doing the right thing, and there's no way around it. I mean, fantastic.
He is, you know, and it's nice to see people in college athletics who are aware of the kind of things that he described, you know, because there are two, I respect all the players coming forward and banding together and wanting to play. And I even understand the passion that's driving a lot of fans and maybe coaches into wanting to see college football. But the way that he described it, yeah, there's got to be an adult in the room and do your adulting. And that's what the Mid-American Conference did. So, proud day for the MAC, even though it was a sad one.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, we've got Steve Stone next. We'll be back with Stoney Mullion on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.